From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.
This is the business of sports.
We're in a situation that we haven't dealt with in modern times.
The pandemic here has really accelerated the investments that we've been advocating for years.
From a macro standpoint, I think our sport industry is really forced to look at the business a little bit differently.
In-depth conversations with the leaders in the sports industry.
Who wants to be the sacrificial lamb that shows up at the first big major sporting event?
We're part of something much bigger than sport right now, and the health and safety of our stakeholders is what's most important.
Every moment, I think we're all, from a business perspective, thinking about the impact that the virus is having across the country.
Bloomberg, Business of Sports, from Bloomberg Radio.
Hello, I'm Jason Kelly.
And I'm Mike Lynch.
And I'm Michael Barr. Over the next hour, we will explore the big money issues in the world of sports and talk to some of the biggest players in the industry.
And it's a big week this week, guys, because the NBA draft happened.
With the first pick in the 1992 NBA draft, the Orlando Magic selects Shaquille O'Neal from Louisiana State University.
In the 1996 NBA draft, the Philadelphia 76ers select Allen Iverson from Georgetown University.
With the first pick in the 2003 NBA draft, the Cleveland Cavaliers select LeBron James.
With the first pick in the 2019 NBA draft, the New Orleans Pelicans select Zion Williamson from Duke University.
With the first pick in the 2020 NBA draft, the Minnesota Timberwolves select Anthony Edwards from the University of Georgia.
And that, of course, was just this week. Anthony Edwards from University of Georgia going number one. No crowd noise, because it is, after all, 2020. We remain in a deepening global pandemic, and thus everything's a little bit different. We are going to check out what happened this week, get the perspective of Marcus Camby. He went number two to Allen Iverson back there in 1996, guys. So the draft, I don't know how much you watched it, but I mean, there was a certain amount of theater, but I miss all the cheering and the hugging, I have to say, Lynchy.
I agree. There's nothing like the players with their families backstage, and when the name is called and they hug their moms and family members and get the hat and come out on the stage. That's a big moment. And, you know, we're going to ask Marcus Camby about that. You know, what was it a big thrill for him when he was drafted number two back in 1996? My problem is that COVID wiped out all the conference tournaments and the NCAA tournament, which I think is a real showcase for the casual college basketball fan to get familiar with some of these names. So, you know, a lot of these names were called last night. I'm going to go, let's see, do I remember him? Oh, yeah, I saw him play once, like over the last couple of years.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was able to catch up with Tyrese Halliburton, who ended up going number 12, lower than he was predicted to, ended up with Sacramento Kings. You can check that out at Bloomberg Quick Take. Speaking of college hoops, Michael Barr, looks like at least the initial planning is underway to have March Madness in a bubble.
Yeah, they are talking about having all of the games. Usually, as you know, when you follow at the NCAA tournament, you have several cities that will host some of the games, and then everything will converge, a confluence, to go all the way back. And this year, in this season coming up, was supposed to be Indianapolis for the Final Four. But now they're talking about just having all the games in Indianapolis area, in Indiana, which is going to be quite a feat, because there are a lot of games, obviously, which I guess if you're the Indianapolis area, that's great. But if you had these games in other areas, that's got to be a blow to businesses around there.
Absolutely, no question. But if there's one city that's equipped to handle all these people and all these teams, it's Indianapolis and in the greater Indianapolis area. There are so many basketball courts, so many venues you can play at. Listen, they handled the Indianapolis 500 every single year without a problem. Mm-hmm. I think they can handle, you know, the NBA playing around there. And it's a great city to walk around. And as anybody that's been there before, it's a friendly city, and it is the Hoosier State. So I think it's a great idea. You can't do the bubble, but I think it's the next best thing. And I think that the NBA proved they know what they're doing. And if they think this is the best, I'm going with them because they have a track record.
Yeah, and I like the forward planning aspect of it, honestly. I mean, I like, you know, sort of making this decision proactively. Look, we all hope that by the time we get to March Madness and the NCAA tournament that we've got vaccines out there and that people feel a little bit more comfortable moving around. But getting that planning going, and who knows what will happen with the college basketball season between now and then. But something to look forward to, and hopefully we will have an NCAA tournament. I cannot let this week go by, though, without talking to you, Lynchy, about the curse breaker himself.
Yeah.
Out of a job in Chicago, Theo Epstein, after a very successful run with your Boston Red Sox and then with the Cubs, he's out.
He is out, and there's an opening with Stevie Cohen's New York Mets. And I just think this, he says that Theo has said he wants to take a summer off. But I think that, you know, he's a young guy, but the itch is still there. And what a challenge it would be to bring the Mets back into prominence. I'll never forget Halloween night. And there was a big, big story that was breaking that he was going to leave the Red Sox after they won in 2004. And we were all camped out with our cameras outside the Red Sox offices. And it was Halloween night, so people were coming by in costumes left and right. He walked right by us. He was dressed up in a gorilla costume. And that's how he left. And he walked
Come
by
on.
all the cameras in a gorilla outfit. He was smirking under it, went around the corner, and took the gorilla hat off, got in his car, and drove away. And none of us knew it. We still were camped out there till midnight, you know, trying to call all our sources. Is Theo still in there? Yeah, we got the back door covered. We got this door covered. And the gorilla walked right by us, and it was Theo Epstein. Look it up. It's hilarious.
Oh, my God, I had never heard that story. Well, he's a smart guy. He proved that time and time again. And
even though he went to Yale, he's a smart guy. You're right.
There you go.
You went the whole McGilla on that one, didn't you?
Fair warning to our audience out there. Lynchy's on fire this week. So just, like, buckle up, because the rest of the show, you don't even know what you're going to hear. All right.
Oh, sweet merciful. Up next on the show, we speak with former number 2 overall pick in the NBA draft, Marcus Camby. That is straight ahead on Bloomberg Business of Sports. You can follow me on Twitter at Big Bar Sports.
And I'm Mike Lynch. I am not the gorilla. You can find me at Lynchy, WCVB.
And you can follow me. I'm Jason Kelly at Jason Kelly News. We're here each and every week at this time. Catch our Apple podcast that drops on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio around the world.
The Toronto Raptors select Marcus Camby from the University of Massachusetts.
There defensively. Melo steps back. No. Tip slam by Marcus Camby. The Nuggets' biggest bucket of the night.
Well, thanks so much for joining us. We're here each and every week for you at the same time, talking to the biggest names in sports. I'm Jason Kelly alongside Mike Lynch and Michael Barr. Today, we're really excited to be speaking with former NBA Defensive Player of the Year, Marcus Camby. He joins us from Houston. Marcus, really good to talk to you.
Thanks for having me, guys.
We were waxing rhapsodic a little bit about Houston, where you've lived for more than a decade now. But we're talking to you in part this week because it is a special edition. It's the NBA draft. We just had it. We're talking to you on Thursday morning. We saw it happen last night, virtually, of course, because that's the world we're living in. The draft, what does it mean to you?
Oh, man, this was like being drafted was always, you know, my lifelong dream as a kid. You know, I was dreaming about going up there, shaking the commissioner's hand, putting on that team cap, and just to see all the faces and of all the, you know, incoming class, and just how much their lives are going to change and how much they're going to change their family lives is always good to see. It's always good to see the tears. It's always good to see the emotions, and just to know that their lives are going to change forever.
Anthony Edwards, number 1 overall, going to the Minnesota Timberwolves. How does that change his life, especially with endorsements, as long as he does his part, obviously? What impact does that have going number one overall?
I think it's going to do tremendous for him, and especially going to a team like Minnesota who has two stars in D'Angelo Russell and Karl Anthony Towns. I think he's going to be a perfect fit to play alongside D'Angelo, and, you know, the ceiling is definitely high for those guys, albeit they're still going to be in the Western Conference. But I think the Timberwolves have a nice core nucleus with those three guys.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.
Hey, Marcus, this is Mike Lynch up in Boston. I covered you and your UMass team in 1996, that magical year. And we were all so excited when you were selected number two behind Allen Iverson. Knowing what you know now, 24 years later, what advice would you have for some of the top draft picks? These guys don't need to be really schooled in basketball anymore, but what advice would you have for them off the court with all the stuff that's going to be coming at them?
Well, pretty much, I would tell these guys to pretty much keep working on your craft. Being the easiest part I was always taught was getting drafted, but staying in the league is probably the hardest part. So, you know, these guys are going to come in with playing with veterans who have families and, you know, who are fighting for a lot, who has to feed their families. So the job is always going to be on the line. So, you know, I would tell these guys to constantly work on your game and get with a vet. Get with a vet on your team that can show you the ropes, that can school you the ins and outs of the NBA, and treat it as a business as the NBA is going to treat you guys as a business. So I think that's imperative.
And what is treating it like a business? What does that look like? What did it look like for you when you first got to the league?
I was different for me. You know, I got drafted by the Toronto Raptors, and it was the second year of existence of my organization. So it was tough, you know. Was a big adjustment for myself, and, you know, being on a team that wasn't really expected to do much because the lack of talent we had and the newness that we had to the NBA was a challenge. And, you know, basketball part I felt was the easy part for me was I had so much idle downtime. I didn't really know what to do with myself. And me being in a whole totally different country, you know, I pretty much stayed in my house a lot because I wasn't really, you know, wasn't comfortable with the situations. But the outside of the basketball world is definitely it's challenging, but it's all about what you bring to it. It's all about what you make out of it. And, you know, the NBA is going to provide you with a lot of opportunities. They do a great job of, you know, with the end programs that they have, with the Players Association and the information that they're giving these kids, that these kids need to soak it up like a sponge, because the NBA does a great job of providing you with information, providing with opportunities outside of the basketball court that I feel that these young guys can take advantage of.
The NBA, the previous season, had success being in the bubble. They carried off the season. The Lakers, congratulations to them for winning the championship.
Boo!
Spoken like a Boston fan over there. How will that impact how sports, not just the NBA, but all of the major sports, how will the bubble advice go on for sports?
Yes, I mean, being in the bubble, you know, I wasn't in it, so I really can't really speak too much about it. But from the outside looking in, it was definitely a challenge. I think the Lakers probably had one of the hardest runs to a championship, albeit everything that took place outside of the basketball court, going down into the bubble, having guys not commit to being on the team to participate in the bubble, just staying in a hotel, being away from your family, all that stuff factor into this being probably the hardest championship that the Lakers have had to overcome, or any team had to overcome. So not being in your homes, not playing in front of your home crowd, I think a lot of that took a toll on all of our players up from this past year. So, hopefully, you know, the way the world is right now, you know, things can start to turn around where we can have fans go back into the arena. You know, I don't really know the NBA plan going forward as for that aspect of it, but I know it can be definitely challenging.
You know, speaking of challenges, Marcus, the restart for practice is going to be December 1st. Now, unlike teams like the Atlanta Hawks and Detroit Pistons that didn't make the playoffs.
Nice. You're really coming. You're just coming at us, Lynchy. Come on, man.
Teams like the Celtics and the Heat and the Lakers, those teams, it's a quick turnaround. I mean, are these guys, are the legs and the body going to be ready to come back and start again on December 1st?
Well, probably the teams that were in the bubble who went deep in the playoffs is going to be a short turnaround. Especially is going to be a challenge for, like, the older guys in the league. Say a guy like LeBron, you know, who's going through, like, his 18th season, you know, who's logged heavy minutes throughout his whole career, who had a long, playoff series this past season. Guys for that nature, it'll be a little tougher. But, you know, those guys are consummate pros. I mean, those guys are gym rats. They love to play. You know, those guys spend – some guys spend over $1 million on their body to make sure they fit and ready for the upcoming season. So for guys like that, I pretty much don't worry about. I know it's going to be a quick turnaround, but I know once the light goes on, these TV games come on, these guys are going to be ready to play.
That investment in your own body, that's a relatively new phenomenon, isn't it, Marcus?
From what I've been experiencing, it's definitely new. You know, guys have definitely take care of their body, but the amount of money these guys are spending now, and especially nowadays with the technology that we have for guys to use, guys' personal workout, guys' personal trainers, guys really invest in the body, and that's really the right thing to do, especially if you plan to play, you know, a long time in the NBA, especially with the wear and tear that the season, you know, has on your body.
Stay tuned for more of our conversation with former college basketball standout, longtime NBA player Marcus Camby. That's straight ahead on Bloomberg Business of Sports. I'm Jason Kelly. You can find me on Twitter at Jason Kelly News.
And I'm Mike Lynch. You can find me at Lynchy WCVB.
Watch me make Lynchy's nostrils flare. Lakers! I'm Michael Barr on Twitter at Big Barr Sports. Lakers! And download the show to hear even more of this interview. Lakers, our extended version. Catch that wherever you get your Lakers podcast.
Thank you so much for joining us. We're here each and every week for you at the same time talking to the biggest names in sports. I'm Jason Kelly along with Mike Lynch and Michael Barr. Let's get back to our conversation with Marcus Camby. So, you know, Marcus, we talked to a lot of players, a lot of former players, people around the league. We talked about the bubble. You know, there were several catalytic moments, really important moments across the preseason and into the actual NBA season. It's a different year when it comes to player empowerment. The NBA was front and center with all of this. We talked a little bit about LeBron earlier in the conversation. Something changed, it feels like, in the NBA over the past few years. Do you agree? And why do you think this era of empowerment has come on so strong?
Yeah, I think it has a little bit. I think the player has gotten more power, I should say, or more say in controlling their destinations of things. And, you know, that can, you know, be a good thing. I think the NBA has done a great job, especially Commissioner Adam Silver, about letting our guys express themselves, being more vocal, be more a part of the social change that's going on in the world. And you don't really see that much in other sports, you know, besides the NBA. Once the NBA guys, you know, step forward, you know, like the Milwaukee Bucks team, they took a stand and said they weren't going to play. You know, they put themselves out there like that, and a lot of guys just tended to follow suit. So, you know, we got to give a lot of credit to the commissioner. He's giving these guys free spirit and free will to express themselves.
Can I expand more on that? The NBA took the lead, allowing the social justice narrative to be front and center in the sport. Is that going to spill over to the next season and the leaders like LeBron James going to carry the torch?
You know, I would hope so. I mean, you know, this change is, you know, nothing's been solved. You know, it's an ongoing process. You know, each day is a struggle, and, you know, everybody is trying to get through it day by day. It's not going to happen overnight. It's going to take more leaders from different sports to step up for us to really see radical change out there in the United States. And like I said, you know, the guys like LeBron and those guys who step up and put themselves out there and and gets a lot of criticism, but they're doing it for the cause. And you got to respect guys like that that's able to, you know, to take the heat for a lot of other people, but still expect to see change.
Marcus, why do you think the NBA has the best relationship with their commissioner, as opposed to, it seems like there's always contentiousness between the baseball players and the owners and football players and the commissioner? But with David Stern and now with Adam Silver, why do the players feel such a close relationship to their commissioner?
Well, those guys are always accessible to the guys. Even when I was playing with David Stern, and, you know, he was always – make sure he saw every team. Every time we went to the New York area, he was invited into the NBA Players Association office or the NBA offices, and he was always around. And in the NBA, I think it's less players as opposed to the NBA, as opposed to an NFL team where there's, like, you know, 50-plus players on a team. So, you know, I think a lot of guys respect David Stern for what he has brought the game globally for the NBA, and Adam Silver is doing a great job of taking that torch and passing it on and doing great things on and off the court.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.
You know, Marcus, I want to go back to the social justice conversation for just a second, because I had a conversation earlier this week with Tyrese Halliburton, who went number 12 in the draft, is going to play with the Kings. And one of the things he and I discussed was this notion that even for him, you know, coming up through high school and college, he did have this hesitation about, you know, speaking out too much. Maybe that's changing, and he certainly is hopeful that it's changing as he thinks about, you know, players coming up now through high school and college being able to express themselves. Did you feel like you needed to kind of toe the line when you were, you know, back in high school and college, and just to sort of get to that draft position, get to the league?
Well, you know, it's different times from when I was, you know, coming up in the league until now. You know, the social media stage and everything is so highlighted now, and the stuff that we see on videos now, we never really saw during my tenure growing up. It was just, you know, hearsay, seriously. But now you get to see videos of what's going on with interaction with the civilians and the police and the census killings that's going on, and it's more to the front light right now. So it gives us more cause to pause and giving players and people time to speak out and say, hey, this is not right. This is not what's called for, and we need change. We need to speak up. We need to, you know, do the right thing. And like I said, the social media era has changed everything the way we see things right now. And like I said, it's given us time to really analyze everything and to see it visually, and it's given us another time to pause and to speak out on it and make sure we're saying the right thing.
Stay tuned for more of our conversation with Marcus Camby. That's straight ahead on Bloomberg Business of Sports. I'm Jason Kelly. You can find me on Twitter at Jason Kelly News.
And I'm Mike Lynch. You can follow me at LynchyWCVB.
And I'm Michael Barr on Twitter at Big Barr Sports. And download the show to hear even more of this interview, our extended version. Catch that wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks so much for joining us. We're here each and every week for you at the same time, talking to the biggest names in sports. It is NBA Draft Week, so we're catching up with Marcus Camby. I'm Jason Kelly, along with Mike Lynch and Michael Barr. So, Marcus, you know, it is such an interesting time as we think about player empowerment. We think about players as brands. We think about new rules when it comes to name, image, and likeness. And students and pro athletes thinking about themselves as a business. I think it's fair to say that, you know, you had some complications and you had some issues when it came to that in your own college career. How do you look back on that? How do you think about where we go from here in terms of doing right by athletes and thinking of them in the right way and owning their brands and getting the right economics?
Yeah, I think the NCAA is doing a great job right now of allowing these athletes to garner and earn wages, you know, outside of just being a student athlete. You know, I get it, you know, these kids are getting scholarships to go to college, and, of course, education is definitely the most important thing that we're getting out of it. But you know, a lot of these schools are making a lot of money off these kids' likeliness and the way that they play and the way they contribute to the university. So when I was growing up, you know, I definitely wish I had that. You know, I've made a lot of immature decisions when I was coming out of the draft, you know, being offered money here and there because of my situation. I was growing up. I didn't grow up with a whole lot of money. Me and my mom and my sisters, we grew up under hardship. So when people are trying to come at you and throw money at you and this and that, and, you know, especially when you're young, you're 18 and 19, you're not really thinking. You're thinking impulsively. You're thinking about what you can get and what you can get at that moment in time. So for me and my situation, it was definitely tough. You know, I went through it. I owned it. I eventually paid back all the money back to the school because I felt that that was the righteous thing to do. But nowadays, I think the NBA is – well, NCAA is looking back on everything that happened, not just with me, but with a lot of players in the past that, you know, came along during those tough times and really try to make a conscious effort about what can we do here to change things? What can we do here to not let these things happen and not let these kids get taken advantage of? So with the opportunity of these kids, you know, maybe to earn money for themselves while they're in college, I think it's a win-win for everybody. It's going to keep people out of troubles. It's going to keep dollars in these kids' pockets, and it's going to keep producing the game of college basketball the way I grew up on it. You know, I grew up on kids staying in school 3 or 4 years, and not nowadays where these kids are one and done because they're leaving for the NBA because of hardship.
You brought up a very good point about a young man making money, and you're now entering the NBA, and you're in your early 20s, and the world's your oyster. And sadly, you hear other stories as their careers end that they did not manage their money very well, and they're broke. What can we do as a society to help athletes, not just in the NBA, but in the NFL and all over, to learn to manage their money and at least live comfortably?
Honestly, in the NBA and the Players Association, I got to give those guys a lot of credit. Throughout the course of the year, they come in with these seminars and about wealth, about money, about what to do on your off time, about education. So the Players Association does a great job of providing us as players with all this information and, you know, all the connects that we can possibly have. And it's us as players that have to take advantage of that. I remember at least probably like once every month, the Players Association would come in there, they would talk to us. If you need help with anything, you need somebody to look over what your financial guys are doing. So they put a lot of resources into that. And I think a lot of guys in the NBA during that time didn't really take advantage of it. They really didn't take advantage of it. And I really wish they did, because we would read and hear about less stories about guys going broke at an early age.
Marcus, I thought that was a really mature decision when you reimbursed UMass over $151,000. And there was another mature decision 3 years ago. You went back and got your degree. You left after 3 years, which I think was the right decision for you. Why did you feel it was important for you to go back and get your degree 3 years ago?
I definitely felt it was important because, you know, I have three kids now. I have an 18-year-old who's about to go to college. We don't know where we're at yet. So, and I was always preaching education to them, and I always felt I couldn't preach it or talk to them if I didn't get it done myself. So that was probably one of the main reasons I went back to school. You know, I didn't go back because of the money. I'm financially secure, but I just thought the fact that, you know, my mom has always stressed the importance of education to me and my sisters growing up, and just me being the first member of my family to graduate college, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to set an example for my three daughters growing up that, you know, my dad did it on the basketball court, but he also did it off the court, and he led by example.
So, Marcus, I have to ask you about one of your businesses that I'm fascinated by. You know, LeBron has his show, The Shop. You have an actual barber shop. So how did you come to do that? And what's it like running a barbershop?
You know, I always wanted a barbershop. You know, being down here in Houston, I wanted to have a business that was a staple in the community. And, you know, I know how it is going to the barbershop. You know, you get your hair cut, you talk and shop. It's just about being amongst the guys in there. And it's great. It's a great business. You know, I love it. You know, getting to go in there and interact with my barbers, interacting with the community and spending time in there. So that's pretty much what it came all about. And of course, I'm always going to need a haircut, so I might as well go get it for free then, right?
You just answered the question. It's like, well, where does the barber go to get his haircut? Yeah, I see what happened. Exactly.
I bet those guys feel a little bit of pressure, though, when you sit down in the chair, right?
No, well, probably at first, but no, I've been having it for 10 years now, so we're familiar with everybody. And like I said, it's a staple in the community, and I'm just happy to be a part of it.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.
Have you gone through the problems because you own a barbershop, and many businesses like that have had issues because of coronavirus? Can you take us through your experience of what it's like going through the coronavirus era and trying to run a barbershop?
Well, it was difficult at first because a lot of people didn't really want to come outside. So, you know, you're not really coming outside. You're not really worried about your physical appearance. So you're not really, you know, worried about going to get a haircut. So, but, you know, it stumbled a little bit, but, you know, we have faithful customers, and we have great barbers who put out great work. So, you know, I don't think it has affected us that much. I think right now things are coming along for us. And I think the other day the governor of Texas said that we're not going doing any more shutdowns. He doesn't care what's going on. I don't necessarily agree with that. But, you know, things are starting to change a little bit, especially down here in Texas. I think we had over, it's like 1 million cases of the COVID, and it's kind of tough times down here. It's kind of tough times everywhere. I just can't stay down here in Texas. But, you know, a lot of people are affected, and, you know, I'm not just worried about myself. I just worry about, you know, our whole nation. I don't like to see, you know, businesses being shut down, people losing their jobs, waiting on federal aid that may or may not come, and, you know, we're dealing with the election. So there's a lot of stuff that's going on in the world that's not sitting right with me. I just wish that hopefully somewhere down the line that can come back to some sense of normalcy, we can get back to being the great nation that we are.
Well, Marcus Campbell, we really appreciate you spending some time with us. You took us all back a little bit, and I was in college at Georgetown when you were at UMass, and I watched you and Allen Iverson face off. I think down in Birmingham, Alabama, I believe, was when
Atlanta,
you beat Georgetown.
Atlanta.
Oh, was it Atlanta? Okay, I couldn't remember. One year was Birmingham, one year was Atlanta. Yeah. And you guys marched on. And then obviously you guys saw each other in the league after that. So we really appreciate it. We got to give a shout out to your barbershop, MC23 Barbershop, down in the Houston area. Pearland, I believe it is. Is that right?
Yes.
All right. So go get your hair cut if you find yourself down there. Marcus will take care of you.
Hey, Marcus, one final question. Hey, Marcus, one final question. Is Antonio still open in Amherst? Up by the campus, the pizza shop?
Of course. I was just on campus this summer. Antonio's is a staple of the UMass community. I love that place. I love that place.
All right.
All right. Well, you'll have to come back and see us and keep us up to date on all your adventures. We really appreciate such a candid conversation with you. Marcus Camby, former NBA center, defensive player of the year back in 06 and 07, a standout at UMass and a community leader here at a time. And great to catch up with him during draft week. Marcus, thanks a lot.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. Well, Marcus Camby, fun to catch up with him. A lot of overlaps, as we tend to have with some of our guests. I do remember that game very well. Mm. I have a picture of the late John Thompson Jr. walking off the court after losing to UMass. That was in the Elite Eight. They went to the Final Four that year. Very candid guy. I was glad he addressed what, you know, is obviously the elephant in the room when it comes to Marcus Camby, which is, you know, owning the mistakes that he made as a college player, and I thought he gave a very forthright answer to that.
Without question. I didn't know how he was going to handle that, but when he said, I owned it, I made some bad decisions. I accepted it was $28,000 worth of jewelry, I think, from two different agents.
Yeah.
But he decided to pay back. UMass had to vacate their Final Four appearance, and they had to forfeit the $151,000 that they received in tournament money. And Marcus wrote a check to the school for the $151,000 plus. And, you know, a lot of guys could say, hey, I'm in the NBA right now. I'm done. Okay.
Right.
See you later. You know, just sort of say, come get me, you know, find the money somewhere else from some alum. A very mature guy. You know, we liked him a lot when we were covering him here. He was a great guy to deal with when he played for UMass, and we were all rooted for him. We followed his career, and I was just so glad to hear him talk about that and so many other mature things, especially about going back and getting his degree.
Right, exactly. And now you got a place to get your hair cut in Houston.
I do. I'm ready to go.
Yeah, both of you guys. Let's just go. We could do a remote from MC23 in Maryland.
I have to tell you, and as when you mentioned about his business, the barbershop, it reminded me of the movie Barbershop.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly the way it was. And I remember when I was going to the barbershop, and this is when, I still do, but
yeah, I haven't seen you in a while, Barb, but please tell me you're still getting your haircut.
Get a haircut, hippie. But back in Detroit when I was getting a haircut, and this is when the Pistons, when they were winning NBA championships, and you should have heard the discussions, which one was better, Joe Dumars or Isaiah Thomas? And I mean, this would go on for about 20 minutes as we're just going on getting the haircut. And it's just kind of neat that that's the atmosphere when you walk into a barbershop.
All right. Okay. Well,
can imagine going to a barbershop and having to talk about 17 titles instead of two?
Yeah. You are coming in hot, Lynchy.
My goal is to be the number one pick. That's something I've been dreaming of since a kid.
It feels better to be number one than number five.
I wear the number because of Mike.
We have a chance to go for three in a row.
Good numbers at a good time.
When I first started wearing that number, I was just happy and proud.
Bloomberg Business of Sports, the number of the week.
Yeah, I got your number of the week for you.
Somebody ate his Wheaties this morning.
Oh, man. Lynchy steals it.
Yeah. All right, number of the week. Let's do it.
All right, we're gonna do this in reverse. And you know what? This very quick, serious thing. A tribute to the late, great Alex Trebek. We're going to do this Jeopardy style.
All right.
This sport is offering one of the biggest prize purses ever seen in this sport. $1.15 million. I want to know what the sport is.
Hmm. What is bowling?
Lynchy.
Let's see. Didn't we have on some esports people?
There you go. That's smart.
I'm going to say some esports event.
You know, I thought you were going to pull a Lynchy and you say, didn't he say esports? What's a triathlon? I thought you were going to do something like that. They're offering in this triathlon, more than 2,000 triathlons will gather at the Daytona International Motor Speedway in Florida next month for an endurance sports festival called Challenge Daytona. And they'll have races for people of all ages. But the main event will be the Professional Triathletes Organization, the 2020 championship. And the world's best triathlons will compete for the biggest prize purse in the sport ever seen, $1.15 million. So I'd like to see that.
Wow. All right. Wow. That's a lot. That is a lot
that's
more
a
money.
That's a ton of money for that's a triathlon?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I love triathlons as much as the next guy, but that's really something. All right, that's good number of the week. Well done.
It is, yeah.
A lot of money.
Barr was off last week, so we had a lot of time on his hands to come up with something he knew we'd have no chance of getting.
No chance.
Zero
of
chance.
Exactly.
And I had been going through the real estate pages of the Los Angeles Times all week. to come back to somebody's house.
Yeah, exactly.
It'll come back.
Esports is a good guess, though.
That's really good.
You've been listening to Bloomberg Business of Sports. We're here each and every week at the same time, plus online wherever you get your podcasts. Those drop every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. I'm Jason Kelly. You can find me on Twitter at Jason Kelly News.
And I'm Mike Lynch. Thank you, Marcus Camby. You can find me at LynchyWCBB.
And I'm Michael Barr on Twitter at Big Barr Sports. You're listening to Bloomberg Business of Sports, Bloomberg Radio, around the world.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way, from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/greenfestival.